Hey, what's up? This is Josh from JusticeGeeks.com, and this is a Just Us Geeks interview. Let me ask you about your early days, you know, the stand-up comic days, you know, when you first started your work in the television industry. You know, I would say that was pretty formidable for, you know, your success nowadays, but it's, you know, we've talked to several voice actors that came to voice acting in a variety of ways. And I'm not really sure if we've ever talked to one that was a stand-up comic before. So that really kind of interested me.
You know, that's true. Like my, you know, yeah, everybody's got their own path and their own journey, man. But yeah, my career path seems to be a little bit unusual in that, you know, I guess there were some other guys that kind of dabbled in stand-up, but, you know, I really made my living as a stand-up. Like that was, you know, for at least 8 or 9 years, you know, stand-up comedy was how I made my living, 100%. You know, that's how I, you know, that's how I paid my rent, bought my food. I'm not a trust fund kid. I'm not independently wealthy. Any money I made was from doing stand-up on the road and stuff. So, and that, you know, that was a lot of years that I made a living at that. You know, probably, well, let's see. I've been day job free since 1987 or 86.
Nice.
So, at least probably day job free since 1986. No, I'm kidding. But
put that on your website. That'd be a new great slogan. Day job free since 1986.
If I had a website, I was just telling somebody, I may be the only actor in 2013 that has zero social media presence on purpose, by design. It's like people are always asking me to do it, and I just go, nah.
Nah, I'm not doing that. It's fine.
I feel like I have the perfect mix of anonymity and visibility happening right now. So no. But that path is kind of weird, you know? And, you know, I started out kind of messing around with stand-up comedy while I was still in my teens in Syracuse, New York, and then moved to Boston in the early 80s and started doing it, and then to San Francisco, where I sort of really took shape as a stand-up. It was a great time and a great environment for stand-up, and it was cool, you know, it was great. But I also sort of had a foot in sketch comedy. I had done sketch comedy when I was a teenager, started doing that. And, all of that sort of led to me being out in LA doing stand up on shows like, you know, everything from Evening at the Improv to Conan O'Brien to David Letterman, to doing sketch comedy on, you know, a show called The Edge that was a really early Fox Network show that was on the same time as the Ben Stiller show. It was during that same period. And then kind of being on that same lot, you know, shooting The Edge, which had Jennifer Aniston in it, Wayne Knight, myself, Julie Brown, and, you know, Jill Talley, who became my wife and remains my wife. So, you know, that was when that was my first series, my first television series that I worked on. And it was fun. And the Ben Stiller show was going on at the same time on the lot. And so, you know, I knew Gene Garofalo and David Cross was a writer on that show. And I knew him, and Bob Odenkirk was a writer, and actor on that show. So I knew him.
Oh, wow.
And it was just kind of a great, you know, just kind of a great time, you know, to be, you know, to be starting out and, you know, again, you know, not too many responsibilities yet, you know what I mean? Not married, no kids yet. And, you know, just really creative environment.
Right.
And that kind of led to, you know, Bob and David getting Mr. Show on the air and tapping Jill, my wife Jill, and I to be cast members of Mr. Show with Bob and David on HBO. And, during all that time, I was kind of dabbling in voiceover and trying to do more voiceover because I liked it better than doing on camera. And just, you know, trying to going, wow, I wonder if I could wonder how much on-camera work I can phase out and just keep, just do as much voiceover as possible and screw on-camera. It's boring. And
we talked to Maurice LaMarche, I guess it was about 6 months ago. And
he kind of did the stand-up path.
Yeah, he did a little
Canada.
TV, yeah, in Canada, and he did a little TV work, and he said he realized that, you know, it was so much easier to do voice acting because no one cared what you looked like when you came into work, and it was just, you just go in the booth and do your thing.
Yeah, and for me, it's that makes it sound like laziness, which I'm sure it wasn't, because I work my butt off on voiceover, but, you know, I've always been a hardworking person, you know, I guess that's I've always had that going for me. When talent's not in evidence, you know, I've always been a guy that that worked really hard, no matter what I was, you know, even when I was working kind of soul crushing day jobs, I just couldn't help being a hardworking guy. Going, I know this job is crap, but you can either do a good job or you can do a shit job. I'm just going to do the best job I can.
Right.
Know that I'm doing stuff at night that will hopefully lead towards something, a job that's not like this one,
right,
where you're putting stuff in bags at a supermarket or whatever. So, you know, so that, yeah, that was kind of the path. And, you know, I also had played in, you know, rock and roll bands and stuff like that. You know, I did everything. You know, I did sketch groups, I did stand up, I played in rock bands. I wrote, you know, I just trying to not have a day job,
right.
and it you know, sort of took a while for me to figure everything out, but it worked out. And right around, you know, right around the time that like the early 90s, then shows like Rocko's Modern Life on Nickelodeon,
man, yeah,
things like that, were, you know, I was starting to book shows like that, you know, while I was still doing on camera work. And then, you know, SpongeBob came along and Powerpuff Girls and Cat Dog and all that. And, you know, they were all kind of going at the same time. And there was a, you know, it was just like, I guess like Maurice LaMarche said, it was just kind of like, you know what? I think I'd rather do a whole ton of this kind of work rather than do the other stuff.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, if I got to spend my days, you know, and I try to work as much as possible. I mean, you know, look at my IMDb. It's pretty, pretty scary.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? Maurice is too. You know, it's just like the word no is not in my vocabulary.
Right.
Especially once I had kids and I became the CEO of Danco. It's like,
yes, sir.
You know, would you be interested in playing? Yes.
Absolutely.
Don't you want to know anything? No.
No.
I'm in. Will the check clear? Yes. And, you know, not that you're a whore or whatever, but you go, I like working. If it's a choice between working on something on Tuesday afternoon or sitting at home on Tuesday afternoon, bring me in. You know, I'll always find the fun in something. And, you know, it's been a blast, but probably part of what Maurice was getting at with, you know, it doesn't matter what you look like. You know, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. Like that's what was kind of very much intoxicating about voiceover for me was, you know, I noticed that when I was auditioning for commercials and sitcoms, or, you know, even if it was like kind of an A-team knockoff kind of show, you know, I'm the skinny guy with glasses. I'm reading for the dude who's good for computers.
Yeah.
With computers. You know what I mean? I'm auditioning
every time
for the part of the man who's good, you know, the fix-it guy who's good with computers, you know. I'm never going to be able to really, you know, I ain't going to play Captain America in live action. I can do it. I played him, you know, in animation. I've been Iron Man in animation,
right.
Been Spider-Man in animation. You know, I've been, you know, Plastic Man in animation. I've been, you know, cows, sponges, monsters, dogs, females, males, kids, old people, gay people, straight people. You know, it's like, you know, it's that the number, the variety of characters that you get to portray is really, really where the fun is. And the fact that you're able to do a whole lot of different shows for different demographic audiences. So, you know, the same day I'll go in and do something for PBS Kids, you know, Word Girl, that's like teaching kids, you know, vocabulary. And then, you know, I'll drive across town and do Brickleberry, which is, you know,
Daniel Tosh.
You know, a pretty shocking. Yeah,
the opposite of PBS.
Yes, exactly. It's Daniel Tosh. Daniel Tosh and PBS on the same day. And they're both fun. And both shows are full of really fun people to work with. And when you walk in the booth, you're laughing and having fun and really trying to, you know, trying to do a great job. And, you know, that doesn't change. You're just trying to do what's right and solve a puzzle. You know, for me, one of the things that when I first started observing voiceover, even before I broke into it, was that, you know, it seemed like in stand-up and stuff like that, the best guys weren't the most popular guys. You know, maybe this guy was kind of good-looking or whatever, so he, you know, would get bigger laughs than
right.
the other guy who maybe wasn't so good-looking and maybe wasn't such a dynamic performer, but his jokes were freaking, his material was way better than this guy who's chucking a jive at selling substandard material with Blarney, you know
right.
what I mean? And, you know, when I started to observe voiceover people and booked my first couple of jobs, I looked at the Maurice LaMarche's, the Billy Wests, the Charlie Adlers, the Rob Paulsons, the Tress McNeils, the Cap Susies, and said, wow, the weird thing about this world is that the guys that are working the most really do seem to be the best guys.
Yeah.
It's a meritocracy.
Right.
Which I was like, wow, it's kind of like sports. You know what I mean? If you're the guy that can sink the basket like the most, you'll be the guy that they call when they're putting the team together. And, you know, I kind of liked that because it was like, okay, this is doable and it's not quite as random as other areas of show business where, you know, if I can work on my versatility and work on just being, you know, becoming known as one of those guys that they can call you and throw stuff at you and you can do it. And, you know, and you can ad lib, Tom can ad lib or add stuff to the script that makes sense. And he's not wasting everyone's time, you know, making jokes that don't fit into this particular project. Like, you know, if you're doing a Disney Junior show and you're ad libbing stuff that's, you know, R rated.
Right.
Well, okay, maybe it's funny, but you're
wasting time.
Can't put that in the show. You're wasting time. And, you know, so, you know, that's a skill that you learn is just adding stuff to the script that has something to do with the show. A lot of that has to do with reading your scripts before you win, which a lot of voice actors don't do. I'm surprised at that. But, you know, so here we are, you know, after all these years and voiceover is kind of where I'm at now,
right.
You know, with an occasional foray into on camera, like this, Haunting Hour show that airs Saturday.
Exactly.
December 21st. And on the Hub. And when I do that stuff, it's just really fun. It's like a busman's holiday. But after years of doing stand-up and voiceover where you just get right to the good stuff as a performer, you know, you just get right to the meat, it does seem glacially slow process.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're like, God, you know, you're like, God, I've been here for 8 hours and I've done 3 lines, you know, God, I could have done 26 voiceovers by now.
Exactly.
You know, and it's like, man, I can't afford the cut and pay to be a voice on camera actor. But it's,
has it afforded you the better opportunity to have a normal life? I've always wondered that. I assume it has, you know, I mean, you don't go out, you know, shopping and somebody say, oh, look, they're SpongeBob SquarePants just because they recognize your face. You know, I'm sure that's nice.
Well, when I go out in the SpongeBob outfit that like the guy at the theme park wears.
Yeah.
Then they recognize me. what an attention whore.
It's the glasses. That's what it is.
Guy's a loser. No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, it, you know, the normal life that it affords. You know, it's great because I guess what I'm trying to say is that it kind of lets you live a life that's normal enough without being totally normal. You know what I mean? Like, you still sort of have this weird, fun, freaky job where you get to hang out with flaky artists and
really right.
and funny people, but you're home for dinner. Like you say, you don't have people going through your garbage. You don't have TMZ
exactly.
chasing you through the airport and terrorizing your children, you know? And it's, to me, that is really a gift. And, you know, that's one of the reasons people are going, hey, you should be on Twitter or Facebook, TomKennedy.com. I'm like, John, I feel like I've got a good balance going on here.
Yeah.
I really don't want to mess it up. You know,
don't want to mess this up. No.
Yeah, classic Coke. I've got my career is like classic Coke. I don't want to suddenly turn it into Coke Zero and then it's not as good, you know?
Just keep it right where it is. Stay classic.
Keep it right where it is for as long as you can. Because, you know, I think water seeks its own level. There are people who have that hunger to be famous or they really want to do big, huge things and be known or whatever. But, you know, and that's fine. You know, I'm not putting that down. But, you know, that's not my personality. For better or for worse, that's not my personality. So, you just kind of find something. You know, all the guys that have been influential on me, you know, in an artistic way, are guys that just found something they love to do and do it for as long as possible.
Right.
You know, whether that's that painting or sculpting or making music or playing guitar or, you know, the sports or whatever. If you're lucky enough to find the thing you love to do, then the trick is just to figure out ways that you can do it for a long, long time. And, you know, I think, you know, show business is total, you know, flavor of the month, shiny object. You know, how many, when I look at something like SpongeBob and how many years it's been around, we're doing a movie right now. And then I think about how many things have come and gone since 1997 when we did that pilot. How many
right.
huge actors, huge shows, people who were on coffee mugs and bumper stickers and stuff, and now they're footnotes.
Yeah.
You know, you just go, you know what I mean? You go, wow, what is that guy doing now? You know what I mean? And, you know, some of them are doing very well at other things. Maybe they took a behind-the-scenes job or whatever. Well, maybe some of them aren't doing not so well, but it's, you know, I kind of like the fact that with voiceover, you could just work and have, you know, and it's work that I really enjoy and you could make a living. And like you said, you know, it's funny. I get recognized just often enough that it's nice.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I, it's funny. I was going, yeah, nobody ever recognized me. But when I was Christmas shopping, just last week, like in a toy store, a woman in line behind me said, "Wow, you're Tom Denny. You're." I said, "How do you know that?" And she said, "Because my kid is really into voice actors, and he knows all you guys.
I wish
he was here right now." She goes, "He would go crazy. He would go crazy." And I said, "How old is your kid?" 6.
Oh, wow.
I go, wow, your kid is the same kind of freak that I was.
Right.
Because, you know, that's the stuff that I paid attention to from a really early age. Like, wow, okay, I think the guy that does Bugs and the guy that does Daffy are the same guy. Pretty
right.
sure, you know. And, you know, in the pre-internet days, you know, pre-Google.
When
you know,
no one knew anything.
No, you didn't find it out yourself.
That's
it was
right.
Like, it was like, you'd have to put on your helmet with the big light bulb on it and go spelunking for information, you know? And, you know, now it's like, you know, but so, yeah, so that just happened very recently and it was nice, you know what I mean? The lady was really nice, but that's just somebody going, oh, my kid loves your work. And you go, oh, that's really nice. Well, tell him I said hi, you know what I mean?
Right.
But, you know, when you look at what famous people have to deal with, along with all the money and, you know, everything, there is a toll, a price to be paid and, you know, your personal life and stuff. And I think if you're the kind of person who's willing to make that trade off, then it's going to work out great.
But, right.
But I always valued other things. So I feel like, you know, it's great. Because I remember my kids would say, you know, when they were younger, they'd go, "Dad, you know, such and such, my friend says you're famous. Are you famous?" He keeps saying you're famous. And, you know, the answer I arrived at eventually was, well, I'm not famous, but I do the voices for drawings that are very famous.
Right.
So, you know, Steve Hillenburg created SpongeBob, you know, created McCracken, created the Powerpuff Girls. You know, Peter Hannon created CatDog, whatever. Those characters are famous, and I'm lucky enough to be one of the, you know, I'm like a puppeteer. I'm like the guy who's working Kermit, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That makes sense.
So I look at what I do to be more akin to that. It's more like being a puppeteer or something than it is like being, you know, Tom Cruise or something.
Right. Rocco's Modern Life has to be one of my favorite all-time cartoons. I loved Rocco's Modern Life. It was a freaking awesome cartoon.
Me too. I should have mentioned Joe Murray in that last list of people.
I mean, I'm afraid that it was way before its time. Do you feel like that? That maybe it was just a little too early?
Yes, I do. I feel like, you know, it's funny. In a way, it was perfect timing because, you know, Ren and Stimpy had just come along and made it okay for cartoons to be funny again and made animation guys the focal point again, the way that Chuck Jones and Bob Clampett and guys like that, Avery guys, were during the, you know, the golden age of animation. And it was like, wow, you know, here's John Krasiluszi and this is his show and his sensibilities all over, and you can tell that it's not a commercial for toys, it's not, you know, gummy ponies, you know, or whatever. It's like, it's just funny stuff with funny drawings and funny voices, you know. And Joe Murray, you know, kind of was right in the wake of that. And but I agree with you, it was a little bit ahead of its time, and it's funny how different times were back then, like on the corporate level. Like Nickelodeon let stuff through on that show just because nobody was paying attention.
Exactly.
You know, the gatekeepers were asleep at the switch, whatever, you know what I mean? Everybody was just kind of left on to do their thing. And I think that made for a really, really good show. I think it always makes for a good show when you let creators be creative without, you know, some bean counter breathing down their neck and trying to get artistic with them. But, it's funny. I think it sort of did. It didn't quite get the chance it should have got, and I'm really happy that now that it's out on DVD from Shout Factory, and also on Netflix,
right?
That there's a whole new audience of people discovering it that weren't even born when it was on.
Yeah,
and that's happening with a lot of stuff. You know, Netflix. I mean, sort of a double-edged sword, you know. It's not really good for the networks, and it's not really good, you know, in terms of residuals and stuff like that. It kind of blows for the actors too, I gotta say. But you know, looking for the silver lining in it, I gotta say that it's cool that, you know, Powerpuff Girls, all that 90s Cartoon Network product and 90s Nickelodeon product is all on Netflix now. So Colin Chicken, Johnny Bravo, Rocco's Modern Life, you know, all those shows are totally getting discovered by kids, you know, who the older siblings of these kids that are discovering them now, like, didn't know these shows.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's kind of a dead zone where kids didn't know Rocco's Modern Life, and now kids know it again.
Exactly.
Because they, you know, it's on Netflix. So they you know, what's on the Nickelodeon page of Netflix, or what's on the Cartoon Network page? Hey, what's this crazy old show? You know, Powerpuff Girls. What is this? Dexter's Laboratory. What's that? And I just think it's so fun to be talking about those shows again with kids, like not adults that grew up on the shows, but kids who are watching them now as kids and connecting with them in the way that that the original audience did when the original audience was kids.
Right.
It's really fun. So it's not nostalgia. It's somebody going, it's a kid going, it's a, you know, a 12-year-old going, that's a really funny show.
Yeah. It's just so great.
My dad told me about that show, you know.
It's great because, you know, I honestly thought that I would never see Rocco's Modern Life again. And I think I just accidentally found it one day and thought, oh my God, this is incredible. I mean, I really thought I would never get to see this show again. And boom, there it is, you know.
It's really fun watching it again, you know. And it's great that, you know, when you look, you know, Joe Murray has, you know, since then he did Camp Lavo for Cartoon Network. And now he's, you know, got all the, you know, all kinds of really creative stuff happening, you know, online in various areas. Wrote a great book on animation. About how to make an animated show that I think is one of the best books on animation ever written. You know, Steve Hillenburg started out on Rocco's Modern Life. It was his first gig. Now he's created SpongeBob. You know,
exactly.
Derek Kleinman, who was big on Rocco's Modern Life. It was his first gig. Now he works at DreamWorks Animation. Nick Jennings is that was a big guy on Rocco. His first gig. Now he's the art director for Adventure Time. And, you know, Doug Lawrence, Mr. Lawrence, who was the voice of Filbert the Turtle on Rocco, now he's, you know, he's Plankton, and he's also a great animator in his own right. So, you know, everybody, Charlie Adler still works all the time. So it's kind of like everybody thrived, you know, on that show afterward. Like it was everybody's first, you know, most of us, it was our first animated series that we were ever on. And it's great to watch that people have thrived and stayed in the game, you know, because this whole business is really just about staying in the game, because it's a hard game to stay in, you know. A lot of times you get edged out for various reasons, like those on-camera people we were talking about who are hot for a second and
gone,
and not so much.
Right. So it's nice.
Rocco really had a subversive sensibility that I really, really liked, and that I think has aged very, very well.
Yes. Yeah. It is one of those 90s cartoons that did age very, very well. You know, there's a lot of stuff and content from that time that did not, but I think because it was so far ahead of its time, you know, it aged very well. You know, Ren and Stimpy, the same thing. Powerpuff Girls, the same thing. I mean, you know, they have aged gracefully and are still just as enjoyable today as they were, you know, when they first aired.
Yes, and it's funny, I never thought of this, but all the shows that you're mentioning, you know, I guess we can put in the Batman, the original Batman cartoon too, all take place in worlds that are kind of non-time specific. Like,
right.
You know, the phones have dials on them. You know what I mean? Like the clothes. You don't really know when Powerpuff
Girls happened.
Girls happening, really. I guess there's an occasional computer or whatever, but, you know, Rocco's Modern Life, same thing. You know, the televisions have rabbit ears on them. But, you know what I mean? It's like, I guess they don't age because they're not really, they're more about who they are than when they are.
Right.
So
SpongeBob, I guess we'll go there.
okay. I love going there.
You know, you've been not just a whole lot of people get the opportunity to play with the same character for as long as you have. I would assume that, you know, lots of staff have changed, people have come and gone, but is it still just as enjoyable to you now as it was in the late 90s when you started?
It is. I mean, the thing that changes is that, you know, when you're first doing it, you don't know how it's going to be received. So, you know, in the case of SpongeBob, I was doing stuff, and all of us were working on the other voice actors and animators, we're doing stuff that we thought was very good and very funny and very stupid and in a good way.
And totally wrong.
But, all of the above. But you don't know how it's going to be received. And then when it starts getting a little bit popular, and then a little more popular, and then holy crap, this thing's taking over the world. Oh my God, I saw a person in a SpongeBob t-shirt the other day. You know? That's really exhilarating when that happens, and you go, wow, this show, this thing's kind of taken over the world. Like this dumb thing that started out as like Steve Hillenburg drawing it on a napkin or something, it's global, you know, this is nuts. And it kind of happened in a slow, kind of a slow roll kind of a way. And so it's a little bit different after the show is so ubiquitous. A little bit of that thrill of like the ride. Yeah. The show's arrived.
Yeah.
The ride is a lot of the fun. And then you're at your destination, which is everybody knowing what this thing is, or a lot of people knowing what it is. And, but the work itself remains a blast. You know, the actors, all love each other. We're working on the movie. I just did a recording session 2 days ago on it. And, with Bill Fagerbakke, that's Patrick, and Roger Bumpus, that's Squidward. And, it's really fun. I mean, everybody gets along great, really digs each other, has a blast. Bill and I, I got hornswoggled into doing like this holiday parade in the San Fernando Valley, out here in Southern California. And I dragged Bill Fagerbakke Patrick into it. He's like, oh, God. He's like, oh, man, I've only done one of these when I was on Coach, man. It sounds like it's going to be fun, but it's horrible. You're riding in this car and, you're waving to people and people are just looking at you with such contempt. he goes, the 100-yard stare becomes your friend. But, so I dragged him into this holiday parade. He's like, all right, I'll do it. And so him and I sitting in this like classic, like 50s convertible, waving to people. They have a PA system so we can talk, and the voice of SpongeBob and Patrick, the costumed character, is marching next to the car. And, me and Bill were just laughing so hard, and he was like, wow, what a difference being on a show that kids love, because it was just kids going crazy and coming up in the car and shaking our hands. And we got these microphones with a PA system, coming out of this old car. And so, you're rolling down the street and we're talking to, people on the sideline. Hey, kid, I love your Angry Birds shirt. Nice Angry Birds shirt, dude. And they're like, and it's kind of like at a sporting event where somebody sees themselves on the Jumbotron,
yes,
and they
yes.
realize they're on the Jumbotron and they go, oh my God, this is me. So Bill and I were just, I think most people that do the grand marshaling at those parades don't have as much fun with it as we did.
Right, right.
I was crying. I was crying. Bill's like, we're in this car, and Bill's like, this is so cool. SpongeBob and Patrick have a Woody. I'm like, hey, be careful how you say that, Patrick, okay? that could easily be taken out of context. He needs the car, folks. He needs the car. But it was, so events like that that just happened, in the last couple of weeks, just show me that, SpongeBob and being SpongeBob and still, being allowed to portray that character just has so much pleasure in it. It
right.
just has so much fun in it. And, I think that being able to play all those other characters on the IMDb kind of makes SpongeBob even more fun for me. You know what I mean? Because you never feel trapped. Like, oh,
exactly.
I'm so sick of being Spock, like that. I never have that Gilligan moment.
Exactly. Like, right. Right.
You know what I mean? I don't have that thing where I want to, drown my character in the bathtub. It's like, cause I love doing SpongeBob. It's great. It's a blast. It, every day that it keeps going on, I look at it as, the bonus round.
Right, exactly.
Because, that show almost got canceled after, the fourth season or something. And, it almost went away. And then they were like, wait a minute, just look at these numbers. We can't cancel this show.
Right.
This is selling so much merchandise. So you know, for me, and I think Steve Hillenburg kind of wanted to retire at that time, which artistically I understood, but, you know, as somebody with kids that got to go to college and stuff, I was like, come on, keep the sponge alive.
Yes. I got to pay the bills.
Come on, baby, need a new pair of shoes. It was, so, you know, it's really fun because you get to do other stuff and you also get to be this. It's not exclusive, is what I'm saying. So
exactly.
So it's all good. You just, you know, you get to be, you know, all kinds of different people and animals and creatures and monsters and, you know,
Well, I guess that's
really fun.
That's the great thing about voice acting is that, you know, I mean, you're not like the Harry Potter kids who, once you're done only being Harry Potter for all of your life, you look at yourself and go, oh God, I can't do anything else but be Harry Potter. I mean, you've been one of the most successful cartoon characters of all time for a long, long time and have still worked and done other things successfully at the same time. That's a tribute to the industry.
Yeah, and I really, you're right. All that stuff you said, which is stuff that most people don't put together, by the way. I'm not buttering you up, but that really is what I feel is that's the thing that I'm grateful for every single day is like that, what you just said, you know, because, you know, a lot of times you just go, you look at these kid actors and you go, man, I hope they're going to be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope there's not a shotgun in some lonely hotel room down the road. But it's like, you know, I've been on these kids networks long enough that, you know, I've seen a lot of kids come and go on those tween, you know, kind of live action shows.
Right, right.
Where you go, wow, this kid's really talented. Wow, this kid really knows comedy. Wow, this kid's really funny. You know, this kid's great. And then, but when you get to a certain age, a lot of times it's hard. You know,
it's time to find a new kid.
Yeah, and so maybe you can come back. You know, maybe you can come back years later and be Rorschach and The Watchmen or something. But
right.
Jackie Lee Haley,
if you're lucky.
But that's very, very unusual, and it takes a lot of intestinal fortitude that I'm pretty sure I would not have. But it's funny, like in that same Christmas parade, you know, we're in this old car and there's a stuffed beaver with a Santa hat on it, like on the hood, like tied in, like as a hood ornament. And I said to the driver, I'm like, why does our car have like a beaver and a Santa hat on it? And he said, oh, I did the Hollywood Christmas parade a couple of days ago and I was driving the cast of Leave It to Beaver. I never took the beaver off the car. So he had Jerry Mathers, it was the beaver, and he had Tony Dowd, it was the big brother Wally, and he had Ken Osmond, who was like, you know, the rotten neighbor kid Eddie Haskell.
Right.
And he was driving around in a car, and I'm like, wow. That's like, that's kind of awesome and kind of like weird at the same time.
I didn't know those guys were still around. Kudos on them for
They're
making it, though.
Still around. Well, good, well, I know that Eddie Haskell was an LAPD cop for a long time.
Oh, wow.
And I think Tony Dowd might have done some TV directing. I'm not sure about Jerry Mathers, but, you know, I mean, it sounds like those guys are at peace with it.
Right,
but
right.
I'm sure there's a period in your young adulthood where you're just like, I'm so sick of being the freaking beaver.
Exactly.
you know, when you're 20 years old, having been the beaver, isn't that cool?
No, not really, no.
But I think when you're in your, you know, when you're the age they are now, there's probably, it's probably very gratifying, I would think. But, yeah, you know, with the cartoon, with the voiceover stuff, it's a, you know, it's a different bag, you know, and we talk about it all the time. Like, all us voice actors, you know that we've got this great thing going on and that, you know, we know why it's good and what's good about it. And we just are pinching ourselves all the time. I have that conversation multiple times a week with Rob Paulson and Maurice and, you know, all those guys, you know. Billy West, all those guys. It's a topic. It's a recurring theme in our conversations.
Well, and you know,
we get to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Aren't you glad we're not on some film set in freaking Dubai for 8 months filming Mission Impossible 17, you know?
Yeah. it's really interesting because, you know, a lot of you guys have done this for, you know, for quite a while. You're widely recognized, and it's very rare, I think, when you find another show that comes along that kind of is kind of a different mold that captures your attention. I'm totally in love with Bob's Burgers on Fox. H. John Benjamin, I think he has what it takes. Like, he gets comedy in a way that he understands how to make the show funny. You know,
no, he's supernaturally funny. I mean, he knows right where the jokes are. And you're right. And yeah, Bob's Burgers is a very good show. And you know, my 16 year old son turned me out of that show. I had been watching it, and he said, "Dad, you'll like this," and he was right.
Yeah, it's just interesting that, you know, there's just out of nowhere, there's this show that, I mean, you know, I know that he had done lots of stuff to get to the point to be, you know, to have a Sunday night show on Fox, you know, right behind The Simpsons.
Right.
But here's a show that, you know, it's like some of these older shows from the 90s. The humor's the same. The timing's the same. The subject material can be the same. You know, it's just great to see that.
It's character-based.
Yes.
You know, it's character-based. It's you know, I think that show has a really sweet heart, you know what I mean? And I'm sure a lot of that is, you know, Lauren Bouchard, you know, bringing that sensibility to the table. But I think it's a very human show, you know what I mean? Among, you know, it's edgy, and it's, you know, there's subject matter in there that is, I guess you could call it quote unquote edgy, but
right.
At the end of the day, the family and the characters have a warmth and a realness, you know, to them. Like, you know, like I remember as a kid, like thinking, like watching TV and like the Brady Bunch and people like that in sitcoms seemed really phony to me, but like Bullwinkle and Rocky seemed real.
Yes, exactly.
they seem like Bullwinkle and Rocky, I could picture myself hanging out with, you know what I mean? The Brady Bunch, I'm like, they're fake.
Yeah. And I'd be okay with that. I'd be totally fine with that.
Absolutely. It's really cool. It's a fun world to inhabit. And, you know, and people have a relationship with animation. There's something about animation that, you know, just has a whole special place in people's hearts. Like those cartoons that blew your mind when you were a kid, like kind of, they become a part of who you are.
Right.
I know that's for sure true about me, you know, where Looney Tunes and Droopy, Tex Avery Droopy cartoons and Max Fleischer Popeye cartoons and, you know, Flintstones, Jetsons, Top Cat, Huckleberry Hound, Yogi Bear, like, Rocky Bullwinkle and Friends. That stuff was, you know, looking back, like in retrospect, that stuff was so much the bedrock, no pun intended, Fred Flintstone, the bedrock of who I am. You know, it's like wow, so much of what I like and how I make my living, and, you know, it all comes from digging that what came before, you
right.
know. And so hopefully, you know, you know, hopefully I'm not being flattering myself too much or being an egotistical jag-off, but I think, you know, who knows? Maybe stuff we're working on now will blow some kid's mind that will, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
We're becoming like the core. We're becoming the core of the aesthetic core of kids that are growing up now. You know, whatever show you're on. Sometimes it's the most obscure shows that touch people in a deep way. Where you go, oh man, you know, people come up to you and go, man, such and such was the show that made me want to be a voiceover actor and animator. And you go, wow, that show was on for like 2 weeks. Really?
12 episodes.
Really?
Good job.
Yeah, it's like, wow, that's great. That's something that, you know, I totally forgot about. Had this,
right.
this lingering impact on a kid, because, you know, everybody has those weird songs, obscure songs or movies or whatever, that, or TV shows that aren't quote unquote successful in the ratings or money making sense, but there was something about them that made you love them, you know?
Exactly.
So.
Awesome. Tom Kenny, you have been fantastic, my friend. I've enjoyed our time.
I think I talk too much, and it's going to cut this down to like 5 hours.
No, that's perfect. It's absolutely perfect.
Well, I bet once you take out all the ums and ers and you knows from me, you'll be 45 minutes shorter.
Okay. Maybe. We'll see. I think it'll cut.
It was a really good conversation, and you made me think about things in a way that I hadn't thought about before. So it's
awesome.
It was kind of like going to the shrink. It was kind of like going to a good shrink.
You're welcome. And that'll be $75.
Thanks, Dr. Josh.
Thanks, Dr. Josh.
5 cents, please.
This has been a Just Us Geeks interview.